Welcome to episode 15 of season 11 Movie Room Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Chris Henry of the Apollo 13 Minute. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while, Chris. It's been three seasons.
It has been way too long, and thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure. I absolutely love doing these.
Well, I just have to pick more World War II movies for you.
Yes. World War II or aviation, and I'm your guy.
you don't deal with trains, you know. That was last season trains, you know.
I'm actually, it's funny, I'm a little bit of a train nerd, as you mentioned that. So
wait, you think like Sheldon or not?
Yeah, a little bit like Sheldon. A little bit. I think they're pretty cool. I collect a few models, and I'm born and raised in Pittsburgh. There was a lot of train stuff there. I run the aviation museum, and we don't have any trains, but there's a lot of similarities between people that are interested in planes, trains, and cars, and boats.
Automobiles. Planes, yes. Trains, and automobiles.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. One of my favorite movies, by the way, but yes.
which I also did, you know.
That's a great movie.
I agree.
Have you watched the John Candy documentary?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, that was a hard.
Heartwarming. I almost cried. I almost cried in the middle of that one because it was.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
My favorite thing, and this is totally, we're off the rails already, but what the heck? We'll talk right about this for a second. One of my favorite things that I ever found out was that the end scene of Plane, Trains, Automobiles, one of the ending scenes, when he's in the train, when they finally separate and Steve Martin is finally by himself and he's just kind of decompressing and he's thinking about, you know, the turkey and seeing his wife. And then you see him thinking about like all the funny stuff that had happened on the trip and he's laughing. They actually filmed that all independently. What had happened was they had the camera on the train, they roll the train and there was actually supposed to be a scene where somebody talks to him while they're just kind of getting everything dialed in. He was just sitting there not doing anything. And he starts laughing. And as he's looking out the windows and stuff, and they're like, what are you thinking about? And he tells them these things and they put those things, those images in the movie.
Yep.
Which I always thought that was such a fun fact it was just perfect. You couldn't have planned that any better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know I'm talking to the master of it, but I just recently found that out. I thought that was like the coolest thing.
Well, if you would have listened to my season, nine seasons ago.
I know.
You would have known that information 4 years ago.
I know. Yeah. I know. I needed to get on this quicker.
But that's okay. It's you know, better late than never.
Absolutely.
So there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, thank you. You know, thank you for forgiving.
And it's never too late to go back and listen.
You know, yeah, I will.
They're still there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the important part of these is, you know, my first intro to this was when Hal was doing The Rocketeer. And I saw what it did for The Rocketeer. What I mean by that is there was a lot of work done. And, you know, The Rocketeer, it didn't have quite the fanfare it does have a good bit of fanfare, but it didn't have like the DVD extras, you know, that Band of Brothers or something like that does. And Hal and Jim's work, I really think helped preserve the story of making that movie and what was all around it. Cause there was a lot bigger job than anybody thought. And it was really pretty special. So I think that's what's so great about the Movies by Minute is it's fun, we have a great time, but in reality you're helping preserve the storytelling of what went into making this movie and what it meant to people, and I just love it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. You know, again, my one regret about doing Band of Brothers now is that none of the men are still around. You know, had I you know, not that I was doing Movies by Minute when any of them were alive, but if 15-20 years ago I or someone else would have done something like this, you know, you wouldn't have been able to get these guys to talk about it also, you know. That's the only regret, but it's still a way to memorialize them in a good way, and hear their stories via other people. I mean, you've met some of them, so we've stories from you. Some of the other guests have also met them, so I'm getting stories from them also, stuff like that. So that's it is a way to preserve their stories.
Any
So
way that you
I'm very
can,
proud of it.
any way you can preserve what they do is, and what they did. I mean, a lot of these guys went to war at ages of 19, 20, 21 years old, and then they didn't get to come home and enjoy the freedom that they provided. They didn't make it home. So, anything that we can do to help shine a light on, what they did. And I think that's what's so great about what movies like Saving Private Ryan and what Band of Brothers and The Pacific and Masters of the Air have all done is it gets it in front of a younger crowd. I'm an airplane guy, so Masters of the Air most recently, and people would kind of nitpick like, well, this tail was the wrong color or something, and I'm like, okay, I get that, and from a purist standpoint, I'm like, Jesus, that was okay, this was off or something, but in reality, what's happened is I work with people who are the same age as the guys depicted that were in the series. They're in their early 20s, who are suddenly now introduced to a completely different group of heroes that they never even knew about. And the more recent attempt at making Midway, a lot of people had some gripes about that. But I'm like, I was in the movie theater, and I remember, the lights come up, and the guys in front of me were two college age kids. And one of them was Googling Dick Best to see if Dick Best was still alive. And I'm like, there's a kid on an iPhone Googling Dick Best, SBD Dauntless pilot from Midway. The movie did its job. That was it. It told a story that now has other people re-digging deeper into it. Perfect. I had friends of mine who asked me, that Doolittle Raider scene, was that real? Was there really a Doolittle raid? Because they're not into history. They weren't into airplanes. And, then you're able to say, yeah, here's the book 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. Go read it. But it
Or if
gave.
you want to be lazy, go watch the movie 30 Seconds
Go
Over
watch the
Tokyo,
movie. Yeah, the movie's
go
fantastic.
watch Pearl Harbor. I mean,
Yeah,
there are enough movies
any of
that
that.
depict it that you can see it,
Yeah, and Pearl Harbor was another one that got a bad rap where people were like, oh, there's a lot of stuff. And it's like, guys, this movie is helping get a younger generation interested in it, and it did. Like I said, the movies do their job, and Band of Brothers did it. I mean, wonderfully. I mean, I think it did it probably bigger than they thought it was going to be when they made this.
Yeah, no question about that. Again, if Band of Brothers wouldn't have worked, they wouldn't have made the Pacific or Masters of the Air.
Yeah, absolutely. And in turn, what they ended up making, even outside of this great piece was they arguably made the greatest miniseries ever made.
Yes, I agree with you on that too. Okay, so episode 15 begins with the aerial shot of Winters watching the sky invasion. And ends with fade to black after Eisenhower's message. The funny thing is, this episode is one of the few episodes in this entire season that is a pure minute by minute episode, because there is a minute and 6 seconds on this episode instead of the 5 minutes that we've been getting all the other ones for. So you're sort of been shortchanged, Chris, but on the other hand, you're back to the purist.
That's all right. That's all right.
Which
Back to the
works.
roots.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So
And this episode is special to me. And I remember when we were talking about plotting these out, I had asked for an episode that was around this subject because so for years there's a company here near where I work here at our museum that takes a retired DC-3s and C-47s and they refurb them and they put turboprop engines on them and
One second,
they make them.
I want to stop you for 1 second. A DC-3 and a C-47 are the same?
They kind of are.
Okay.
So
Okay.
originally the airplane was.
I knew that these are C-47s. I didn't, when you refer to them as a DC-3, so I don't know if that is because it's a similar aircraft or.
So let's get we're okay. I'm gonna take like 30 seconds, and I'm gonna get really nerdy here with you.
Take as much time as
So,
you want, because I want to learn about this, and I'm sure everyone listening wants to hear about it also.
oh well, awesome. So the airplane was originally developed as the DC-3, and that was by McDonnell, well, Douglas Aircraft Company at the time, and that was built on the DC-2, which came before it. Looks similar, but they're different aircraft. They made the DC-3 civilian airliner, really game changer for the airline world. And then they sold them to the military. So the United States Army Air Corps at that time, which became the United States Army Air Force, as well as the U.S. Navy and Marine Corps, they all bought these airplanes, but they did not call them DC-3s. They changed their designation. So for the Army, the Army and the Army Air Force, they called them the C-47. The C stood for cargo, and the 47, I think how that was explained to me was like the 47th design or concept, contract to be awarded for that category. So C-47, and they called it the Skytrain. It picked up a lot of different nicknames along the way, the Goonie Bird and all kinds of stuff. The Navy and the Marines called them the R4D, and they just did things differently. Their designations were different, and it had to do with every company had a designation letter that they would use, things like that. So now, when I say DC-3 or C-47, the big difference is the C-47s had a what they called a combat floor or a transport floor, which meant it was a reinforced floor that can you could roll a Jeep in on there and things like that. It had big cargo doors on it, so you can get the paratroopers when they come out. They're coming out. I think it's depicted as they're sort of coming out the cargo door that's pulled in, but you can actually open up almost the entire side of that the rear fuselage. There's two big doors back there, and then they were short on airplanes, so they actually started going to the airlines, and they'd say, "Hey, so a great example, we have one sitting right in front of our museum here, geez, Eastern Airlines had purchased, and before Eastern ever got the airplane, the Army Air Force said we need this for the war effort, and they swooped in and they took it. So Eastern bought an airplane and never saw it until the war was over, and then eventually they did give them the airplane. Here's where it gets really nerdy. So this airplane was built as a DC-3. It didn't have the cargo door in it. It had a people door, and it did not have the reinforced floor. So this airplane would be used for like you couldn't put a Jeep on it or something, but you could use it to haul around a general and his staff and things like that. So they needed a way to sort of make the delineation. So they called this aircraft a C-49. But when you walk by it, it's a C-47. It's a DC-3, that family. So there were all these sub-variants. There was a C-53. It was, I think, the same sort of deal. Where it was a designation for an airplane that was pulled off of a civilian assembly line and then, pushed into military service. So at any rate, that's the story on that. That's the difference between DC-3, C-47, and then your other little sub variants there. But so
Cool.
you'll hear me call it a DC-3 or a C-47, but I'm talking about the same airframe altogether.
Okay, that's
So
fine. Great. Thank you very much for clarifying that. I appreciate that.
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So yes, so there's a company here named Basler, and they convert these aircraft. The DC-3 is one of the most legendary airplanes in aviation history. It's still out there working. There's numerous examples that are not just flying as a museum piece, but they're still flying as a working aircraft, and really incredible airplane.
And it's
So
safe
this,
to fly them
oh
after
yeah,
8 years. Yeah.
oh yeah, and this place here actually takes them. They strip them all the way down and they rebuild them up, and they put turboprop engines on them. Where you're watching the ones on Band of Brothers, and they've got the radial engines on them. Totally, I mean, it's a brand new airplane, basically. They're really wonderful. So in order to make these, of course, they have to have what looks like, I hate to call it this, but a junkyard. They have to have a bunch of retired DC-3s they're going to use to their core, to convert and make into this high performance turboprop airplane. And there was one out there. We had seen it. It was just, it was, it looked different because the airplanes during Vietnam were called AC-47s, and they actually put guns, like miniguns, in the side, and they use them as a gunship, like an AC-130 does today. And they were called Puff the Magic Dragon in Vietnam. And there was one painted like it.
Because of all the drugs they were shipping?
Well, these ones weren't. These ones
No,
were these were ground targets.
I'm talking about the Puff the Magic Dragon. Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly. That could very well be. So at any rate, the we would see this airplane. It stood out because the other ones had sort of civilian paint jobs on them from cargo outfits up in Canada or whatever. And we would never, we'd be like, wow, that one's interesting, and that would be about it. Well, there was a gentleman who would come up here and just run the numbers, and he would trace all the C-47s histories that were sitting in that boneyard, and he discovers that that one that we had been looking at was a plane called That's All Brother, which was the lead airplane on D-Day, the lead C-47.
Oh, wow.
It had changed hands a few times. A guy owned it, sold it, and nobody realized that it was that airplane. And the Commemorative Air Force out of Texas came in. They bought the airplane and they had it fully restored. Did a beautiful restoration, and they did that restoration here in Oshkosh, right in that facility. And I'll never forget. I'm friends with the guys who were leading that restoration, and they said there was a mishap where the people who were going to come in and paint the interior of the aircraft in its zinc chromate preservative paint, they had given them a date, and a date was like 2 weeks from now. And something happened and they had to move their date. And they said, basically, you have the weekend to prep this interior. We need to come in on Monday. So they were scrambling, and there was only like two or three guys working on the airplane. And they said, we need help. And they put out a call for help. And me and about three or four buddies said, we're not doing anything. We should go over there and let's go get our hands dirty working on That's All Brother. That's the lead airplane from D-Day. How many chances are you going to get to do that? And, I remember we were over there and we're working on the airplane. We're scraping paint and cleaning and getting it all ready for the new paint to come on. And it just dumb luck. I didn't even realize it. I'm standing in the doorway of the airplane. And I'm working in that doorway, and a buddy of mine comes over and he puts up an American flag next to the airplane. And I'm like, what is he doing? And this is the guy who was the lead. His name's Keegan. He was the lead guy for the restoration. But he comes over and he goes, do you realize what you're doing right now? And I'm like, yeah, I'm, scraping this paint and trying to get ready for the new paint. And he goes, no, like you're working in the doorway of the lead airplane from the D-Day invasion. And he goes, look at your phone and look at the date. And it was June 6th.
Wow.
And I will never, I mean, the chills that I got at that moment where I'm like, oh my God. He goes, think about where this doorway was on this date in 1944. And he goes, and this is, where you're at today with it. And I mean, it was pretty special. It was it's one of those career highlights for you when you're working on a restoration like that, and you get it all comes together at that moment with something like that. So to me, like when you first pinged me on this episode, I don't really, I think I've ever told many people that story, but I was like, this is a perfect platform to tell that story.
And the next thing you're going to tell me is that Dick Winters was on that plane.
I wish he
No.
was. No, he was not. I don't think any of the Easy Company planes are left. I've actually tried to research that a little bit. Oddly enough, both the planes that carried Dick Winters and Bill Garnier were operated as cargo planes, and we lost them like within the last 15, 20 years. I mean, it
Oh,
was
wow.
crazy. They had been working that long. But I tracked it down that far. I've never tracked anybody else's, but yeah. But yeah, what a wild story that was.
Yeah, seriously. Wow. And the fact that you didn't even realize what day it was. at the time.
Yeah,
No, it,
I totally,
no,
to
I,
me, it,
again, it's fine. It's, the.
it was just a Saturday. I was off, and let's go help those guys out, because they have to get it ready for Monday. And I'll never forget Keegan coming up and saying, like, look at your phone and look at the date. And I'm like, oh my God. So yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, so the divine intervention there. Like,
Yeah, absolutely.
amazing way to be there. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, this minute, we don't really have that much to talk about here anyway. I mean, we have a shot of Winters in the doorway looking out, and we see his point of view of the invasion. We see the large number of planes and stuff like that. It really gives us perspective as to what's going on here. I love the way that they do that. And at the same time, we get the amazing Michael Kamen music from this series that's playing in the background, which gives it even more poignancy watching the way that Winters is looking out at everything that's going on. So
Yeah.
I love the way that they do that. Now, what's what So what it made me start thinking about is two things. One is okay, what is the flight time from Lipari to Normandy? You have any idea?
Oh, I don't. I that's a good question. I would assume it's like a 3 hours maybe in a DC-3 or C-47. I don't know though. That's a good question.
Okay, so that's a, so first of all, today, if you were to take a flight, a direct flight, it takes between an hour and a half. But on D-Day, it took 3 hours due to the fact that they were flying indirect routes and the conditions. Nowadays the planes also move a little faster, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it took about 3 hours for them to reach Normandy in order to try and avoid detection and reach the proper drop zones. Obviously, we know that they don't find the right drop zones. That's a separate
Yeah.
problem. But
Well, it's funny. I've actually tried to fly it in Flight Simulator once. So I think that's why I knew it was 3 hours. I think I flew it once.
and you sat there flying for 3 hours in the
I
simulator?
did, yeah. Yeah,
Wow.
I did.
And were you avoiding anti-aircraft flak and stuff like that?
That I was not. It was civilian peacetime and no problems.
No, but again, if it's a simulator, what's the difference? Yeah.
Oh yeah, I wish there was. It would be an interesting it would be an interesting adventure for sure. But no, this was a civilian flight sim, and I just did it just to see what it was like to fly across the channel there, and it was cool. But I wouldn't want to have done it with people shooting at me, that's for sure. Or with, a thousand other C-47s and gliders and everything else up there.
Okay, well, that's the next question I was going to ask you is how many aircraft were involved in this flight on D-Day?
That's a good question. I know that they actually had to try to get more C-47s gathered specifically for D-Day. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they were taken from the airlines. And I think they said they had somewhere around 900 C-47s. I think it was I've heard it even upwards of 1,000, but I've always heard like 900. And then you had gliders, you had other aircraft supporting it, like Mustangs and B-26 Marauders. But just the cargo planes, just hauling the paratroopers, I think they had about 900 C-47s.
Okay, so there was a total of 2,400 Allied aircraft that were flying that day, and they needed to bring about 23,000 American and British paratroopers and glider troops into Normandy on D-Day. And the 82nd Airborne had about 369 C-47s, while the 101st had 443.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I was close for off the top of my head. It was what, about 800 and some change?
Yeah, but again, that's just the 82nd and the 101st. So I don't
Yeah,
know.
that's true. That's true. Yeah.
The
Wow.
British 6th Airborne, it doesn't say how many they had. Right. It doesn't have the number here for that. Besides having the transports, like you said, they had bombers and fighters. because they were still even at this point trying to outwit the enemy, making them think that there's more going on than there really is. You know,
Yeah.
to try and
Oh, yeah.
confuse them as to, you know, where the attack is going to be and whether it's going to be beach landings. I mean, again, anyone who's seen The Longest Day can see that also, that you know, the Germans didn't even believe that there really would be an invasion,
Yeah.
you
Yeah.
know, at
And
the
then there
beach.
was the whole like rubber air force or I'm sorry, rubber tanks and stuff that they had in other places. And
Right, and you
I
had
mean, there was.
the fake paratroopers, you know,
Yeah.
that
Yeah.
exploded on impact, you know, with that, or didn't explode. They made they what did they have? They had they made sounds as if it was
Yes.
gunfire.
Yeah. That always amazed me. You know, it was interesting. I interviewed, this isn't C-47 specific, but when you're watching this clip, you'll see that the airplanes have the black and white stripes on them. And you may have talked about this in a previous episode. I don't know if you did or not.
Nope, I did not.
Okay, well, perfect. Perfect. This is something I'll touch on. The black and white stripes were invasion stripes. These were painted on the aircraft specifically for D-Day, so that the Allied ground forces and air forces knew that these were friendlies. And so British and American airplanes had these painted on them. They were crude, they were rough. I mean, they were painted on, you know, the day, like 2 days before the mission, or even the night before the mission. And they were done with mops and brooms and everything else. So none of, they were not pretty. When you see a lot of restored airplanes today, they're very straight and masked off, and that's not how they were. I mean, they were rough. But
You hear it's all
it was,
special effects, so therefore they all look nice and straight also.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I got to interview a veteran once, and it was interesting. He let me read his diary. And we now have his diary here. He was a B-26 Marauder guy, and he talked about the fact that they were going to be up early. They had an early mission, and they were going to be up at like 4 a.m. And they weren't really excited about that, but they said they were up. They were getting coffee, and their flight engineer, who flight engineers would always go down and make sure the airplane's kind of getting prepped and everything's going good before they would come and have breakfast. And he came back and he said, "I don't know what's going on. But they've painted black and white stripes all over our wings." And he goes, "I have no idea what this is." And when they went into the briefing is when they found out what this all was. And he actually took time to write that on his diary on June 5th. I remember reading that. And I always thought that was kind of cool because, you know, you get to know a vehicle you see every day, wherever you're, whatever type of job you have. And then suddenly you come in and there's these huge stripes painted on it. You're going to have some questions of, what are you doing to my thing? You know, why did you do that? You know, and I thought that was an interesting piece. But so for those of you who don't know, when you see this and in carrying that forward, if you see a World War II airplane restored and you see those stripes, that's what that is. Those were for the invasion of Normandy.
Wow, that's really interesting. But did they take them off after?
So it depends. A lot of times what they did, the units like the fact that they gave them at least some identification. So a lot of times what they did was they painted them on the tops of the wings, the top of the fuselage, bottom of the fuselage, bottom of the wings. A lot of times what they would do is they would take them off of the top of the wing and fuselage and leave them on the bottom so the ground forces knew that these were friendly not to shoot at them. And that way they were still kind of camoed from fighters above or something like that. Really interesting. If you and you watch Band of Brothers, you'll actually see it when they go in the market garden. You'll see that a lot of the C-47s have the invasion stripes just underneath and not on the top. They actually did make that subtle change, and that's what they really did.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I again
Yeah.
that answers a question about you know, a lot of times in war movies they'll say, oh, those are ours, you know, like how the hell do you know that?
Yeah.
And maybe it's
Yep,
because
exactly.
of something like this. That's so fascinating. Wow.
Yeah.
And
I could talk about that.
again, to have to sit and paint on 2,400 aircraft, you know, within 2 days or whatever it is, that's just amazing.
Yeah. It's a lot of black and white paint.
That's right.
So, yeah, and if you go online, you can actually Google like painting of invasion stripes on airplanes, and you'll see some really fun pictures of, I don't know how much these guys even knew about what they were doing, but you can see them painting, just rollering and stuff like that, and because they were so messy, I mean, they really were messy. A couple years ago, for the anniversary of D-Day, we actually had a C-47 that was just restored. We brought it onto our big plaza, and we had reenactors dressed as a ground crew repaint the invasion stripes on it.
Oh,
That was pretty cool.
and they did it crudely, or they did it properly?
Yep, no, they did it. They did it crudely. That's how the owner wanted it. He wanted it authentic, and it was really, really cool.
Oh wow, that is really cool. See, you always have such great stories, unbelievable. And these are obscure type of stories that you don't normally hear, so cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why I'm here. But I'm happy to get to have an outlet to tell the stories though. So it's a lot of
There you
fun.
go, and I'm happy to be that outlet to hear it.
Well, I appreciate
Always
it.
fascinating, always fascinating. And then as we see the large mass of planes that are flying towards Normandy, so the screen fades to black, and then we get a scroll on the screen that says, "Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you're about to embark upon the Great Crusade, towards which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you." So I love the fact that they call them the Allied Expeditionary Force.
Yeah, I do too.
They don't
I
say
do too.
the Allied Invasion Force or anything like that. You are an Expeditionary Air Force.
Yeah, and you're there to liberate is what you're doing.
Well, again, that's why, and also the fact that he calls it a Great Crusade. He doesn't say a great liberation, a great crusade. That everyone knows the idea of a crusade is to go liberate, and it's coming from a higher power, the idea of going to form this crusade. So it's really cool. And then it says, "Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of the Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking. General Dwight D. Eisenhower, Supreme Allied Commander." Again, short, sweet, to the point, telling everybody, what we're doing here is a good thing.
You are going to be a piece of American history right now, and world history. I mean, that's
Correct.
I couldn't imagine reading that for real.
Yeah, I mean, we last week we did get some of the guys, or maybe it was earlier this week, where they were joking about Colonel Singh's message, but still.
This is we actually have in our collection here in our museum one of those original letters,
Oh,
which is
really?
really neat.
Wow.
We have it. Yeah, we have it preserved here, and that's a cool piece. Again,
Wait, a letter from
and
Sink or a letter from Eisenhower?
the Eisenhower one.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
we have the Eisenhower letter, which I mean, they were mass produced, mass run off or whatever, but to have an original though that a paratrooper had was pretty cool.
That really is cool. Wow, excellent. All right, so is there anything else you want to talk about with the planes on this invasion force?
No, I think we pretty much got it, and I'm glad I got to tell my doorway story. I don't get to share that one, and my wife's heard it a million times. So,
And now you can tell her that you've now put it in the ether, as
that's
opposed
it. That's
to.
it. It is preserved somewhere.
Yes. Excellent. All right. So today's segment is Band Brand, where my guests will give their top five movie bands. So why don't you start
Whoa,
with your number five and work your way up?
all right. So, you're gonna laugh. My first favorite movie band. Yeah, you never hear them play. Which this has to be one of the only bands that's like that, and that is from the Blues Brothers, but it's not the Blues Brothers. It's the Good Old Boys, the country and western band that drives around in the RV. I think they're hilarious. No, you never hear a single song that they were supposed to play, but I love it. It's one of my all-time favorite movies, as you can tell. Number four, I'm gonna go Eddie and the Cruisers. I don't know if you've ever seen that
Of
movie.
course I have. I'm a child of the 80s. I've seen Eddie and the Cruisers. I don't like the sequel, but
Yeah,
appeasing.
no, the original is where it's at, you know.
Because he's supposed to be missing. That's it. You can't have a movie where he's gonna be found. Come on.
Right. Yeah, no, I love the original, love the soundtrack. I mean, it's fantastic. You're gonna laugh at the number three choice, but man, absolutely had a crush on the lead singer, but Josie and the Pussycats, the movie band, from a few years ago. Rachel Lee Cook, I think was her name. Is that right? Yeah, I big fan. So I put that in there. But honest to joking though, as a kid, there was a cartoon that I actually really
Yes, of
liked
course.
cartoon. So yeah, so it goes for two different reasons. My number two favorite band is the Blues Brothers. Love the movie, as you could tell. Since I even mentioned the Good Old Boys in it, but again, I quote this movie probably every other day or so. I told somebody the other day I was on a mission from God, and they were in their early 20s. I had no idea what I was talking about, so I literally sent them a link
They thought
to
you were
watch the
trying to
Blues Brothers.
proselyze. Like, no,
Now,
no,
yes,
no.
yeah, they were like, yeah, they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm on a mission from God, and they were like, what? You know, I'm like, okay, you know. And then my all-time favorite movie band, one that I actually love the music, and it's not a real band, and that's The Wonders from That Thing You Do. Absolutely love that their music. I believe, I can't remember if it's How or Jim, but one of those songs is that was their wedding song.
Really?
And yeah, I can't remember if that was Jim or Hal. I have to ask. Great. If you haven't heard that, if you haven't seen that movie, it's a great movie. Totally not a real band, and it's just a story about a 19 like 50s, 60s one hit wonder band. But really awesome, some big stars in it. But absolutely love the movie. The band is called The Wonders, and That Thing You Do is one of their hit song. But man, it's a good movie, and the soundtrack is killer to it. So those are my bands.
I'm just shocked that someone would have that song as their wedding song. It's a
Yeah,
great
well, so it
song.
wasn't That
I'm
Thing
not
You
saying it's
Do.
not. Oh, it's a different song.
Yeah,
Oh, okay.
there's a love ballad in the song too, or in their on their album, like their
Ah,
B-side in the
okay.
movie, and it's a very very lovely song. I think that was the song that they used, but I'm pretty sure. Geez, I can't remember if that's Jim or Hal, but if you're a Movie by Minute fan and you know Jim and Hal, I'm at work with Hal almost every day, so I can ask Hal too. But yep, but those are my official selections for favorite bands in a movie.
Okay. Makes sense. Hey everyone, it's Rob from the future. I'm sure all of you are on pins and needles trying to figure out who is the answer to the question that Chris and I brought up about at whose wedding did the first dance come from a song played by the Wonders in That Thing You Do? Not the song That Thing You Do, but the song All My Only Dreams, which is the B-side of the album. And the answer is Jim. And for anyone who doesn't believe me or Chris that that actually happened, I have video. I've seen it, so I know that it did happen. I guess congrats to Jim on that. What a great idea for a first wedding song. All right, now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie.
Okay.
We will spin the wheel and see if Chris knows his World War II movie. Around and around and around the wheel goes. Don't worry, you're gonna get two more of these next week when you're back. So
Awesome.
you'll get a chance to redeem yourself if needed.
I hope I can.
Okay, this is a movie from 1955. It's a movie from 1955 starring Jimmy Cagney and Henry Fonda. It's about the men on a Navy supply ship.
Oh man, James Cagney.
It also has Jack Lemmon in it, Ward Bond.
Oh boy. Oh boy. I don't think I know this one.
It was directed by John Ford.
Let me ask you this. Is this the one where Gentleman gets has to learn to walk again. Okay, now you got me. I don't know it.
Mr. Roberts.
Oh man, okay. I was thinking of, oh man.
I know what you're thinking of the John Wayne movie,
Yes, the John Wayne movie where they're on a supply ship and yeah, they
though.
have to yeah.
What's
Yeah,
up,
wrong
Funny
actor.
Eagles, isn't it?
Yeah, what was that one called?
Pretty sure it's something
And
with Eagles.
it's a true story, in that movie. But
The
yeah.
Wings of Eagles.
Wings of Eagles, yes, that's it. That's it. Yeah. Where he they that's basically the yeah, the little aircraft carriers, the light carriers, yeah. Oh man.
Right, that's actually very funny because just a few days ago, my guest had that the Wings of Eagles as his as his as his guest in this
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, very cool.
right, excellent. So, Chris, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Chris Henry?
Absolutely. So I am the museum director at the EAA Aviation Museum here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. We have about 200 to 250 airplanes on display. Many of them are from World War II era. We're here every day basically, except for some major holidays. So please come on out and see us. Like I said, I've also been on a lot of the Movie by Minutes with as guests with these guys, and then I've gotten a co-host with Jim O'Kane on the Apollo 13 minute by Movie by Minute. So please come on out and see us. Come out and see our museum where we get to talk a little bit more about real history here. And thank you for the history that you're preserving here. Both real American, real military and American history, world history, as well as cinema history. I really believe in the Movie by Minutes platform that that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I agree with you. But Chris, don't worry, you'll be back next week. I mean, we're going to take a little break from Chris. On Monday we will have an interview episode. On Tuesday we will have another interview episode to finish off the first part and then begin the second part. And then after that we will have the initial episode of the second part. And then Chris will be back for two episodes next Thursday and Friday. As the men are landing in Normandy. So we'll have stuff to talk with Chris about next Thursday and Friday. So Chris, thank you very much for also being patient and being willing to to take this little hiatus in between.
Oh, hey, absolutely. Good to have be on here and good to chat with you again, buddy.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So everyone have a great weekend, and like I said, I'll be back on Monday with an interview episode. But until then, courage.
Hurry.